The launch. When it came time to launch the iPhone, Jobs decided, as usual, to grant a magazine a special sneak preview. He called John Huey, the editor-in-chief of Time, Inc., and began with his typical superlative, "This is the best thing we've ever done." He wanted to give Time the exclusive, but there's nobody smart enough at Time to write it, so I'm going to give it to someone else. Huey introduced him to Lev Grossman, a savvy technology writer and novelist at Time. In his piece, Grossman correctly noted that the iPhone did not really invent many new features. It just made these features a lot more usable. But that's important. When our tools don't work, we tend to blame ourselves for being too stupid or not reading the manual or having too fat fingers. When our tools are broken, we feel broken. And when somebody fixes one, we feel a tiny bit more whole. For the unveiling at the January 2007 Macworld in San Francisco, Jobs invited back Andy Hertzfeld, Bill Atkinson, Steve Wozniak, and the 1984 Macintosh team, as he had done when he launched the iMac. In a career of dazzling product presentations, this may have been his best. Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything, he began. He referred to two earlier examples, the original Macintosh, which changed the whole computer industry, and the first iPod, which changed the entire music industry. Then he carefully built up to the product he was about to launch. Today, we're introducing three revolutionary products of this class. The first one is a widescreen iPod with touch controls. The second is a revolutionary mobile phone. And the third is a breakthrough internet communications device. He repeated the list for emphasis, then asked, "Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device, and we are calling it iPhone." When the iPhone went on sale 5 months later at the end of June 2007, Jobs and his wife walked to the Apple store in Palo Alto to take in the excitement. Since he often did that on the day new products went on sale, there were some fans hanging out in anticipation, and they greeted him as they would have Moses if he had walked in to buy the Bible. Among the faithful were Hertzfeld and Atkinson. "Bill stayed in line all night," Hertzfeld said. Jobs waved his arms and started laughing. "I send him one," he said. Hertzfeld replied, "He needs six." The iPhone was immediately dubbed the Jesus phone by bloggers, but Apple's competitors emphasized that at $500, it cost too much to be successful. "It's the most expensive phone in the world," Microsoft's Steve Ballmer said in a CNBC interview, "and it doesn't appeal to business customers because it doesn't have a keyboard." Once again, Microsoft had underestimated Jobs' product. By the end of 2010, Apple had sold 90 million iPhones, and it reaped more than half of the total profits generated in the global cell phone market. "Steve understands desire," said Alan Kay, the Xerox PARC pioneer who had envisioned a Dynabook tablet computer 40 years earlier. Kay was good at making prophetic assessments, so Jobs asked him what he thought of the iPhone. "Make the screen 5 inches by 8 inches, and you'll rule the world," Kay said. He did not know that the design of the iPhone had started with and would someday lead to ideas for a tablet computer that would fulfill, indeed exceed, his vision for the Dynabook.